Okay, we're getting ready to start the final session. I always have mixed emotions. I'm very excited that we have good material out of our big book. But I'm also aware that as each minute ticks by, that we're going to come to the end. And you just get very close after one of these weekends, and it's hard to go. But that's just part of the deal. And let's see, we're on page 164, and I think we selected, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And I thought I'd just talk about that second to last paragraph in the big book, because it's got so many interesting sentences in it, and they can lead to other thoughts and other points that I wanted to make. And the first line is, our book is meant to be suggestive only. And sometimes when I get the big book Nazis, I'll ask them to discuss that sentence. And it sometimes it's hard to discuss that particular sentence. And my feeling is that we got to remember that this was written to a guy who was going to get the book in the mail. And we want him to read the 164 pages and then go back and do it. You know, actually, you read it and then you go, oh, now I see. And he doesn't want to have the feeling that he's being ordered to do it. You know, like now you must. So we say, this is just suggestive. So how can you get away with saying that something is suggestive? We get away with that because alcohol makes it mandatory. So we don't have to mandate anything. Their disease is giving them all the pressure they need to work the steps. And that's why they used to say in the old days, well, go out and keep drinking. And when you get ready, come on back. So that's my feeling is why we would choose a word like that, because we don't need a commandment. There's no other place to go. So this makes it very inclusive, and hopefully the reader would then go back. And to amplify that, they say, we realize we know only a little. And I remember when I read that, you guys know only a little? And you put everything you know in this book? That means there's just a little in the book. Where do you get the rest? Next sentence, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. So the rest comes from God. It comes from prayer and meditation, from spiritual searching, which we have the books back there. That's where all the rest comes. So you can see, again, our book is like a treasure map. It guides us right to the jackpot, and then we dig in as deep as we want. And that's where more is revealed. And we're aware of this. You can't learn about God. It has to be revealed to you by God. We can only lead you to God. I mean, we, the book. It leads you to contact, and then the rest of the truth about yourself and about the universe is revealed, rather than you read it in the book and go, oh, I see, now I understand the universe. No, you don't. Not until it's revealed. Because then it takes on the third dimension, and you just, oh, yeah. Once that happens, you're at a total loss to put it into words to explain to someone else. I mean, try to explain your spiritual awakening in words to the guy on the street. And you just can't capture it in words. So how's he ever going to believe that it happened to you? Your aura. The energy coming out of you. That's how he's going to believe. Not going to believe, well, I had this thing, and I saw God, and it was really wonderful, and here's how you do it. And, you know, and if you're sitting there, these awakenings are really something. I don't know if it was Clancy. Is it Clancy that does that thing where the guy's talking about how great the program is, and he says, you forgot to tell your face. And, So we can say all the words, but if the aura isn't there, or the energy, then the words are shallow. They just don't have any credibility to them. So you can see we've started with suggestive, we know only a little, and suddenly we're at God will disclose more to you and to us. And how does God disclose himself? I came up with this for myself. If I were to ask God, would you please reveal yourself? And at that moment, the wind whistled, I'm here. And a dog started barking, I'm here. And the ocean waves started roaring, I'm here. And all of my friends stood up at once and went, I'm here. And music started playing, a symphony, and they're playing, I'm here. And then finally I looked in the reflection in the mirror, and my reflection said, I'm here. And God would have revealed himself, because he's everywhere. And to me, that's what revelation or revealing is. It is, you suddenly see everything differently, and all those words were being spoken before. The waves were always saying, I'm God, do you see me out here? And the wind has always been saying, hey, I'm God too, and the trees have been waving back and forth, hi, we're God over here. And we go, hey, there's a tree, there's a wave. And then one day, bam, it's revealed to you. You realize, and then the big revelation, you realize that you're part of God also. And that is coming home. That is the real journey. And I had the same feeling that a lot of writers put down. A lot of spiritual writers, they go, when this happens, when you suddenly go, oh yeah, the wave, the this, the that, you say, how could I have forgotten that? It isn't that you just learned something new, it's that you forgot. Because that's where you were before we started walking out on the prodigal journey, which really isn't a journey that is done by walking, it's done by making up a story, it's done by thinking. And we just take ourselves out, and we end up telling ourselves such an awful story that we're thinking of committing suicide. We just, as we walk along, we're just going, boy, this world is awful. Those people, they don't treat me right. You remember that? And that's the place where we live, and we talked about that. And so when God reveals himself, it happens all the time. It's happening every second. And that's why we want to develop our conscious contact and our awareness. And the more the awareness is developed, the more we're just running around enjoying God in all of his manifestations. And it just becomes like a picnic. It's just like love, or a buffet, or whatever it is. There's some over here, there's some over here. I'm going to walk in, there's my three friends, my three pieces of God that I'm going to connect to, and everything is happening on the spiritual level. Now, we can't stay there. We talked about that the ego is there to ruin everything at all times. That's its job. Oh, I see you're happy. Well, watch this. Here's some stuff you hadn't thought about in a while. Why don't we think about this? And all of a sudden, these three godlike figures are real jerks, and you're thinking of killing them. And it's that fast. But we're learning how to get rid of that, how to have it impact us on a much shorter period of time, which is what we talked about in the 10th step. Let's see. Ask in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. So you can see, intuitive answers don't come unless you're undisturbed. So if you're wondering why you just never get these guidance and this spiritual energy that transforms your outlook on the day, it can't get in. It cannot penetrate your self-centeredness and your anger or your resentment or your fear. So if your house is in order means that you have cleared the defects that are blocking you from being able to be fully present with God. So you can see why all this work is so wonderful, because the rewards are permanent. I believe a spiritual awakening is a singular event. It is something that you can't pretend you never had. You can't make it disappear. It is a permanent part, just like being born is. And that's why it's so priceless. Now, we might be able to pile debris on top of it so that it doesn't have the effect, but it happened, and it is there's absolutely no doubt that it happened. I've never looked back and said, my ego tries to trick me, you know, that could have been indigestion. And, oh yeah, maybe it was, but it wasn't. And part of me knows and experienced that this is not something that can be explained psychologically. Then I come to, I had a line that I was hoping somebody, this is breaking the whole train of thought. I was hoping somebody would ask a question, because I had this smart-ass answer, to what do you do if you have a terrible obsession that you can't do anything about? And the answer is, why don't you try some controlled thinking? So anyway, that was... let me get back to the pattern that we're on, just out of this paragraph. Obviously, you can't transmit something you don't have. They're talking about the message in our book, but they're also talking about sharing a spiritual awakening with the individual that you're working with. And you can't transmit. You could, if you're brand new, you can transmit, get in the car and I'll take you to a meeting. I mean, we can be useful from the second day that we're here. But you're in no position to transmit the attractiveness that would cause someone to turn their thinking over to you, because you're not there yet. But you certainly can bring them to meetings and get them coffee and engage in chit-chat and make them feel comfortable. But when we're talking about this, we're saying you can't transmit something you haven't got. And since we had the St. Francis prayer on the meditation path, I was going to use that as an example of you can't transmit, because clearly the prayer of St. Francis is all about transmitting. I mean, it's all about you're going to bring love and harmony and faith and hope. But if you don't have it, you can't transmit it. You can't just make it up. So the way I look back at my journey in this, it was as if the prayer of St. Francis has to happen to me first, and then I can transmit it. So as I'm going down the journey, God and the energy that comes from God by working the steps goes inside of me, and where there's hatred, it replaces it with love. And where there's wrong, it replaces it with forgiveness. And where there is discord, it brings harmony in. You see what I mean? In other words, all of that has to be placed inside in order for me to transmit it. And it just goes right down the list, that where there's all the doubt that I have, there's suddenly I'm full of faith, and I'm total despair, and suddenly it's filled with hope. And And then it shows me, it causes me to experience being understood and being forgiven and being loved. And then finally, I understand what the death means of my old self. And that wraps the package up so that I am now in a position to transmit, because now I have it. And it can't be manufactured. You can't from your own ego generate the love that we're talking about, or the hope, or the faith, or whatever it is. It has to be awakened inside of each of us by our own journey. And when that happens, now we can actually live the prayer of St. Francis, because when we go over and start talking to somebody who's full of hate, there's real love coming towards him, and we bring it, and it just seems to melt that hate. It just seems to melt it. We don't have to discuss, well, you really shouldn't hate, it's bad for you. That would be an intellectual discussion. This is just, yeah, I understand. Listen, we could just sit down, boy, and you're just there, and it isn't the words. He just genuinely feels that in spite of his hatred, you're loving him. He feels that energy. And we could go right down the list where there's error. He's all wrong. Somehow, have you ever had this happen? You're on a 12-step call and somebody asks you a question. You haven't got a clue what to say. And all of a sudden, boop, the words come out. And then you come home and you go, whoa, I didn't know I was that smart. And then your sponsor says, you're not. You were an instrument, and those words came through you because they were needed at that moment. And you've all had that happen. I know you have. You just went, wow, where'd that come from? And then you saw it work. And if we stay aware, we're completely aware that we're being used as an instrument, which is what the prayer of St. Francis said. Make me a channel. Make me an instrument. And now, since we did the work, we have got something we can transmit. So that's the way I like to look at that sentence. You can't transmit something you don't have. It isn't, I now have studied the steps and I know how to recite them. That's not, you're transmitting information. But that's not very spiritual. So I guess I'm beating a dead horse to death here. But it's an important point to understand that this is really what's happening. So now we're talking about the relationship with God. And there are several things that in my own mind are the essence of God. One word, and I've had big arguments with Father Terry about this, I just find hope a very counterproductive word. And I'm going to try, but this is just me. So when you go back and say, well, Sandy said, forget hope. You're going to get a lot of people say, well, he's wrong. So I understand that. But I want to share what I'm talking about. I would say the only kind of hope that is of real value is hopelessness. Because when you get totally hopeless, you're going to find God now. Your ego's going to be open, and God's going to come in now. If you're hopeful, you're going to find God. Not now. In the future. And it is an enticement to leave the present moment. As a matter of fact, it's a statement that the present moment isn't acceptable. And the present moment is always wonderful. It's our assessment of it is incorrect. Because how could God create an unacceptable moment? I mean, these moments are eternal. And so I have decided that it's unacceptable, and I sure hope it gets better. So if we're going to, on the one hand, we can say, okay, we're going to operate that it is unacceptable, and then someday it's going to get better. That's good in the beginning. But once you are actually trying to live in the now, my feeling is get that word out of the way and look and see more deeply into the present moment and see if you aren't wrong. You're waiting for things to get better. Did you ever use that expression? Boy, I can hardly wait until things get better. Well, a spiritual teacher would go, well, now, wait a minute. Let's look deeper into how things are now. Maybe they really are wonderful, and you can't see it. Now we're focusing the energy where it should go, where we're going to go in, and then this is from, boy, way back about 40 years ago, and I would talk about this, didn't know what I was talking about, but I was talking about it. And I would say that I always had the problem du jour with my sponsor. I'm sure everybody remembers that, or the problem of the hour. And I would run to his house, the sky is falling, and fill in all the blank, the money, and the wife's going to leave me in the down there. And he would go, yeah, and then he'd go, but you know, you got 6 months sobriety, and you're the coffee maker now. And you gave a talk the other day, people really like that. And then he'd go on and on, and so you see, it's that's really how it is. And I remember going, well, if you look at it that way, what did he do? He changed my assessment until I agreed that everything was fine right now. And I believe that that is the focus of spirituality, is the power to see that the present moment is unbelievably perfect. The present moment is unbelievably perfect. So it's the power to see it that we're seeking. And if we can apply that, then we are constantly living in a moment that is spectacularly perfect and completely non-understandable, which I think life is. It is a fantastically wonderful, unexplainable event. And that gets rid of our desire to understand. We always want to know. I want it explained to me. I want it explained to me. There's nothing to explain. There's only something to experience. You just experience it. When you start trying to explain it, you ruin the experience. You have this wonderful sense of well-being, and then you go, I wonder why I'm having this sense of well-being. You start dwelling on it, and now you're not having a very good experience because we tried with this intellect to understand everything. And, you know, if you want a good prayer, say, I'd like to get rid of wanting to understand anything. Be free of that. Because clearly it's a weapon the ego uses to screw things up. So we're talking inevitably about two places that God lives. First, he lives in the silence. And second, he lives in the present moment. And if we're not there, we're never going to find him. So we experienced a little of that last night, which is why we have a silent 3 hours and a silent dinner. And many of you reported that the level of communication improved during the moment of silence between you and the guy next to you or the guy in front of you in line, and there was this pat on the back or eye contact, and we suddenly realized that there's some huge treasure to be found in the silence and another huge treasure to be found in the present moment, which is where God lives. And so I can't go into the whole thing on the now, but I did get a question from Craig about the now, and I'm going to send him a lot more stuff, but I've been thinking about this for 15 years probably, and I finally put together a toy. I had notes and I had cards that I'm using and all of that. And I left out probably one of the simplest reasons why it's so difficult to live in the now. I mean, I can't believe it. It's like right now, it's so obvious. And I'm sitting there last night and I went, geez, why is it so difficult to live in the present moment? Because the ego will die if you live in the present moment. And he's going to put up the ultimate fight of his life to stop you from living there. Because that's where God lives. And anywhere that God lives, the ego is dead. So you're going to find the greatest resistance in the world. That's why when you sit down to meditate, you start getting harassed big time. Big time. What are you doing? You're busy. You don't have a half an hour. I don't care what you think. You don't have a half an hour. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I don't. And then this battle goes on for a half an hour, and you walk back to your sponsor and go, you know, meditation doesn't work. I'm more upset from meditating than I am from not meditating. Why? You're taking that ego into where he's going to die. And what would you do if somebody was squeezing you into choking you to death? You'd put up the fight of your life. And so this is the resistance to going into the present moment. It was there right in front of our faces all the time. I suddenly went, oh, yes. I'm trying to kill the ego. I mean, not injure him. Kill him. And he's putting up a hell of a fight. So that helped me understand why it is always so difficult. Even when I find this moment and I just am reveling in it. And I've done all the things. There's a lot of things that you must get rid of to be in the present moment. You have to get rid of anything that has a time element in it. Now think of how many things have a time element in it. How about a goal? How about a cause? How about a plan? How about your retirement plan? How about a business plan? How about anything that has a time element connected with it can't go in the present moment because you won't be there. If you're remotely thinking about some plan that has to be carried out or a goal you're trying to reach. Well, the goal isn't reached now, is it? It's reached later. You're connected to events. I remember Eckhart Tolle, the book that we read back there, he had a CD and he was in New York. And I think I've mentioned this before. It just broke me up. He is a funny guy on CDs. And he went out, and New Yorkers walked faster than anywhere else he'd been. So he was almost out of shape just trying to keep up with New Yorkers walking down the sidewalk. But he speeded up so they didn't walk over him. And now he's just going down, you know, at quite a brisk pace. And he started thinking to himself, where the hell is everybody going so fast? And he concluded that where they were going, if you really cut through the mustard, they're going to the next moment, which is going to be better than this one. And if you think about it, we were trained to think that it's always going to get better. It's always going to get better. Now, if that's our frame of reference, that it's always going to get better, why would you ever stay in the now? You'd want to get out of the now as soon as you could. Oh, I've been in the now too long. I got to get moving towards happiness, towards whatever it is. So you can see the conditioning that we have to keep moving towards something that we can't get. And God said, hey, all right, it's right here. Do you want it? No. And then if you chase long enough, you suddenly realize nothing's happening. You know, I got to promote it to sales manager, and I thought that would make you really happy. I guess vice president. I was mistaken. I'm going to bust my butt for 7 more years, and then I'll be vice president. Here you are, and you've just moved into that desk. You've been there about a week, and you go, man, this sucks too. You got to be the president. You're the top dog. I think that's why we want to go to the top, because we've been told that's finally where you'll be happy. And then you get up there and you go, man, somebody handed me a line of crap. And that's what we've been handed. But it sells stuff. So it's important that we keep that thing going. You know what I mean? Get up there, get this, get that. I think that's the heart of every ad. Buy this sneaker, throw away the other one, you'll be happy. So we've right here, we're just talking about it. See to it that your relationship with him is right. You could say, see to it your relationship with him is present. See to it that you are in the present moment. I could use that and it would be equal. It would say exactly the same thing that this says. See to it your relationship with him is right. See to it that you're in the present moment. And great events will come to pass. It's the only place great events can come to pass. That's where greatness is. It's in the present moment. So there's just so much. Not only great events for you, but countless others. Meaning, everyone that you come in contact with while you're in that condition will affect their life. When you're spiritually fit and you are generating this energy and you go in to pick up your dry cleaning, when you leave, they go, God, that was great that he just came in and picked up his dry cleaning. And you may not be aware of that, but that's what happens. I always like when that guy comes in. There'll be two people that you leave and they go, I like it when that guy comes in. He's got something. And maybe you are nice, but there's more than that. You walk out and they go, I feel better. No, it won't last that long. But do you see? Now contrast that with when we were drunk and self-centered and went in the same dry cleaning place. What do you mean it's not ready? Well, we told you it takes till tomorrow. No, you didn't. I thought I could get it in an hour. Let me see the manager. And then we did that everywhere. And we, as Bill writes, I think in the 12 and 12, we brought out the worst in people. That was our specialty. We brought out the worst in people. So everywhere we went, people were at their worst. It's no wonder that we came home going, man, people out there are awful. We lived in a world full of awful people. Now, who created that world that we lived in? Me. That's the world I created. That isn't, those people aren't awful. I had no idea they weren't awful. I thought everybody was awful. They're always yelling at me. And now, we come in here, we get this energy. Now we go through the same people, the same routine. I got to go get a driver's license. You know, a motor vehicle department. God, it's awful. Look at the line. And then you're in the line, and the person behind you is telling a funny story, and over here, and then you're over here, and you're engaged in all this. You didn't even notice that the line took a long time. And then you get up there, and lo and behold, they actually have the paperwork. And then you walk out, and you're astounded. And this applies everywhere. So because of the new energy that you are transmitting, you suddenly live in a world with wonderful people in it. That, you know, and you just go, man, you have no idea that they all became, quote, wonderful because of your energy. So we just created a different world to live in. Only this world is God's world. We finally got to see, this is what it looks like when you bring love, when you do the prayer of St. Francis, when you bring each one of those qualities wherever you go. So, let's see, get to the end. Great event. This is the great fact for us. And great factor capitalized, meaning that this fact is an eternal truth. You will reap what you sow. And when you bring this energy, you will be returned with like energy. And so, in fact, we have, by working these steps, brought ourselves back into God's world. And it's just a question of maintaining it and staying there, taking the work to be able to stay there more and more and more. And that's what we're doing now. We've had a glimpse of it. You remember Bill said we got a glimpse of the kingdom. We were rocketed to the fourth dimension. Boom, oh, wow. And then the ego goes, that's enough, pal. Brings us back down. But we know it's there. So we're at the level now where we're seeking, sought through prayer and meditation. We already saw the fourth dimension. We saw the little glimpse of the kingdom. Now we're going to go, I want more of that. And that's what we're doing here. We're opening the channel wider, and we're taking the action to go against our own ego. And that's the battle. We're the warriors, and we're going to battle and see who wins. And I enjoy it. Now that I understand the dynamics of it, it's like a game. And you win by being undisturbed. Remember, that's the name of the game. Whoever goes through the day the least disturbed wins. End of the game. Those are the new rules. If you go through, and if I stay undisturbed all day and you get angry twice, I win. And so then you keep doing that. And then yesterday, well, I was angry this much, but now shrink it. And then just challenge yourself. Somebody back in Tampa, they have a Thursday is the day that everybody can drive any way they want. They just do that ahead of time. And then they go out and they're thinking, oh, you want to? Oh, that's fine. Yeah, you go ahead, cut right there. That's good. You probably wanted to get there. Fine with me. Today, everybody can drive any way they want. And then the next day, you're going nuts. And you go, why don't I let everybody drive any way they want all the time? And so we start moving towards that. Why can't I let everybody behave any way they want all the time? And my friend Ed Chandler, God bless his soul, as he went out his front door, he let 5 people be wrong ahead of time. And so, there's 1, 2, and he just cut. So he had this free path in front of him. And so we're starting to see something that we didn't know existed. And we always wrap it up with this. The two ladies are talking to each other, and about a third lady, and one of them says, well, you know her. She lives in her own little world. And it's meant to be a derogatory comment that, her own little world, she's the only one that doesn't care about anybody else, blah, 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 blah. Well, I would suggest that everyone in this room lives in their own little world. And so does your wife or your girlfriend lives in her own little world. And no matter how close you are, you don't completely know the world they live in. And they don't know completely the world that you live in. Because they're different worlds. They're the worlds that we created as we told our story, as we grew up and put together all the ideas that constitute the world that we live in. And most of us made a rotten place to hang out. It was lonely, it was negative, it was bitter, it was restless, irritable, discontent, it was all those things was the place that we lived. So that means on the planet there's 6.7 billion little worlds. Isn't that amazing? We got this one sphere and 6 billion separate worlds. And an author said, yeah, but surely in addition to that, there's the real world, And the answer was, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but no one lives there. You follow what I'm saying? Well, maybe technically you might be right, but no one lives there. Because they live in the one they created. So that's a funny way of looking at planet Earth and all the people on it. Good luck, guys. And then we get lucky. And we have disaster strike, and we're forced to compromise on living in our world, and we're dragged into a drunk tank, a nut ward, hospital, and into AA, and they open the door just a little bit, and the sunlight starts coming in, and we start seeing God's world. And the more it's revealed, the more amazing it is. And we start looking around at it, and in order to make sure we don't enjoy it, our ego tries to understand it. Tries to understand God's world. That's one of the great tricks the ego plays. You know what I mean? Just, how did God do this? What is this? You don't know. And God and life are mystery. Mystery. Did you ever go to mystery thrillers, movies, plays, you're reading a book? Part of me is thrilled with the excitement that the author is weaving as he leads me through to some surprise ending or whatever it is. That's just part of me. In order to ruin the adventure, the other part of me is trying to figure the ending out ahead of time. I can solve this damn. So instead of enjoying the journey, I'm figuring it out while I'm going. This guy can't fool me. I know what it is. The butler's in here, and now I'm in conflict. I'm enjoying it, but I'm figuring it out. And if I do figure it out when it ends, I feel superior. My ego goes, boy, you smart. So I've learned to not enjoy the trip, but to try to figure it out instead. But when we come up against God and the universe, it's a mystery. But you're going to frustrate yourself to death if you try and figure it out. Bill said, right in the big book, when he's talking about going to the moon and someday they will. You remember that, the longshoreman? Yeah, they'll do it. Well, that was in 1939. And people were open to the idea we might be able to do that. And he said, men of science are forcing nature to disclose her secrets. Okay, so in 1939, the scientists were convinced they were this close to knowing everything, to force nature to disclose all her secrets. And where are we now? We're in 2009. And I've heard them on television. We are this close to knowing everything about the universe. And then something appears, a super black hole or a quark. And they go, what the hell is that? Oh. Don't worry. We can pull this in. It'll fit in. We can fit it into the theory any second. So we're still this close. There's another universe? Okay, don't worry, that's not a big deal. We can work in multiple universes. And it just goes on. And I'd like to be here about 100 years from now. There's one little thing. What? Uh-oh, I'll be back. We got one. And so you can see the mind wants to figure it out. The mind that's trying to figure it out can't enjoy it. They can't experience what it is. So there's one way we try to figure God out, and the other way we can simply look at the show that he prepared for us. He worked so hard getting this stage ready where we live. He had to rest a day. You remember that? That was hard work putting this whole thing together so that when we arrived, we would have mountains and streams and oceans and storms and wars and parties and life and death. All this is going on. And we can either watch it and enjoy it, or try to figure it out. I would suggest that we just watch it and enjoy it, because it's a great thing to behold, this whole thing. The bonfire and the stars and the sky last night and the wind and the music. All we did was experience it. And that's all that God ever wants us to do. He wants us to look and see how wonderful it is. And wonderful means full of wonder. We just sit in wonder and in awe at this whole show that he prepared for us. I sometimes think the best prayer that we could say to God is, "Wow, God, wow." That means we're looking and we appreciate what he did for us. And so I hope that we can wrap this up and stay in that constant state of wonder on a permanent basis. Go ahead, John.
I see the rain, red roses too. I see them blue for me. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The blue and clouds of white, bright blessed days, long sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow in skies, also on the faces of people going by, I see friends shaking hands, saying, "How do you do?"
Trip, everybody. Thanks for being here.